All right, guys, thanks for joining me. We are on, I think, episode 3 or 4 of the Renegade HPG podcast, depending on kind of when this publishes for everybody. And we've been going through a lot of episodes talking about the Battletech trading card game, and that's what you guys are on today. And so for those listening, if you haven't checked out those previous videos, there's some links down in the description that you can kind of click on after this discussion. But this is actually going to be a really good starter for anybody that's kind of diving into the card game or finding it for the first time, whether you're picking up kind of the cards, you know, through eBay or however you find it, or you're connecting with either Lackey or Tabletop Simulator online, you can play there. But my guests today, Mark Roberts and Gustav Olsen, are going to be here today. Mark was a top four, I think. Mark, was that your highest place at World Championships back in the day?
Oh, well, this is where all my secrets come out, isn't it? Oh, I never actually got to Worlds. It was one of those things. Came third in the UK Championship, first tournament I ever played. And, of course, the first 2 spaces got a free trip to the States to go and play. So missed out on that one, I'm afraid.
Oh, close. Good stuff. What was we didn't talk last time. Did you, were you always in Alaska or you were in law school at the time?
I was in undergrad when Battletech was big on the scene in the mid-90s to late 90s. So I did not have the opportunity to travel to Worlds. But I have had an opportunity to sit down across the table from world champions and play them with some success.
Awesome. Yeah, I connected with Peter thanks to you, kind of, you know, putting me in touch, and so I've made contact with both Peter and Terry, kind of the first and second place from that first World Championships, and they're down to kind of reminisce and connect and talk. So I'm looking forward to that.
That'll be fun. Peter's a character. I'm really glad that he was willing to do a flashback in time, and I'm looking forward to that episode myself.
Awesome. Well, let's dive in. And so, you know, for those listening, our goal today, we are going to take a deep dive through the limited and / unlimited set, you know, mostly pretty much the same set minus a border, and just kind of, you know, start to kind of go through the cards. I know kind of Mark's done some work kind of preparing a good outline for us to kind of work through, but we are going to be kind of talking about notable cards, going through, you know, both mechs, missions, commands, going through kind of basic strategies, things that you need to know about building from this deck. And it will be, I think this will be interesting too, because, you know, I know for me, having picked up the game recently, you know, the sets, once you get beyond Counter-Strike, starts to get a little bit pricey. And so a lot of people that are picking up cards, you know, when you pick them up in lots or not, they're definitely dominated by limited and Counter-Strike. And so kind of, you know, looking at the game just from kind of how it existed in this kind of first release, I think will be valuable for a lot of people that are just kind of, you know, picking up collections on the side and kind of diving in with whatever they happen to find. So Mark, I'll, I've got your PowerPoint here, and I can kind of like figure out a way to kind of overlay it on the screen when we dive in and start talking. But, you know, we are going to go through, let's see, mechs missions, commands, you know, kind of what did you envision for kind of the best way to kind of start walking new players through this?
Not really sure, to be honest. I added a little bit to it since I threw the basics at you. We were just going to look at the actual set itself. So I'd set a little introduction up, say there was so many cards and whatever else. And to be honest, I'd come up with a list of about 70 cards, which was about 25% of the set. Mm-hmm. Some of which are reasonable, some of which are pretty good, and some of which you should probably go outside and burn.
Fair. Well, it's a learning curve, right, to kind of building the sets and stuff like that.
I think your number one ranking, Mark, was do not ever put this in a deck.
That's the worst card.
Do
not ever put this in the deck. It's best fed to your pets.
Fair. I like that. All right, so let's get those out of the way. Let's. What are the cards that we should never touch that should sit in a binder to show that you have a full set, and that's about it?
Well, the great thing here is actually that I just went through the set in alphabetical order, as opposed to some of the ones that were really good or really bad. I didn't actually rate them in a ranking system.
Okay.
There is one that sticks in my head, and it's called Heavy Industry. And it's just awful. The reason it's awful is that basically, you can tap it for 2 resources, which is great if you want 2 resources, but those 2 resources count as one of your deployments. And in this game, it's very important that you use your deployments well, wisely, because that's what's going to be turning up next turn, or you're building, or you're putting that plan in your head about how you're going to go and develop things and beat the hell out of the other guy, or deal with what he's put on the table. So the more, well, the better you use your deployments, you know, that's your strategy. And the fact that this takes up your one of your deployments for two resources just takes it out there. If you think about it another way, I've tapped it for two resources, great. But I could put a resource down this turn, resource down next turn, resource down the turn after. And I'm in credit, so to speak, even after I've used it.
Right.
Okay, it's zero cost, but there are much better things to put in your deck, in my opinion.
All right. So we've got avoid heavy industry, but also kind of the takeaway for that for new players is just the opportunity cost. I think a lot of new people just in card games in general, they look at what the card is doing like, oh, that's good. Yeah. And they don't realize what they can't do if they're using that card or deploying that card. I picked up this game to kind of have something fun to do with my girlfriend because the tabletop was a little bit slow for her. And she definitely falls into that trap of like, oh, this card is good. And, you know, I've been sitting here having hours and hours and hours of conversation with guys like you guys talking about tactics. So I got a little bit of insight, but, you know, for that new kind of player in there, they're like, oh, this is good. And they're not thinking about the opportunity cost, which I think is key.
If you're new, stick it in a deck, play with it, see what happens, see what it's like, try it. There is nothing wrong with experimenting. And just because either myself or Gustav have got an opinion on a card, doesn't mean it's right or wrong. Everyone's
Absolutely.
Got their own play style. Everyone has different ideas. What we might think is a complete and utter doozy is stellar in someone else's deck and whatever else. So, I'm reasonably confident with heavy industry. But if you want to try it, go ahead. Be my guest.
See what happens.
My top place as the number one fodder for your pet is Blackhawk Prime Nova. That's a 13 cost mech logistics and munitions buyout. It has a 1 armor, 7 structure and 7 attack. It overheats for 4 with +6 attack. It has jump, but it basically kills itself with an overheat. And you are paying an exponentially over cost for the value you get out of that mech. So if you're putting that mech in your deck, unless you're doing something funky with one of the later set cards, Omni Podcash, you are making a mistake.
Yeah.
See, this is where we get some great ideas, because with OPC, Omni Mech Podcash, you can take a 2-cost Black Hawk, which I think is the D, which is the 1-7-0-2-missile mech, flick it and turn it into that Black Hawk Prime, which you can then go and smack someone else's stockpile if you overheat for a massive 13.
And
I rated it a little higher than that, each to his own. I think to put that in context, if you're looking to win a tournament game, then you probably need to be thinking about dealing 40 damage to that stockpile. If you can deal 40 damage to that stockpile, by the time turns have gone through, your development phase has gone through, you start attacking, they're drawing cards. There's probably 40 cards left. So if you can hit for 13 quite early, that puts you on the front foot. It's a doozy if you don't do it that way. If you pay for all 13 for it and the L&M costs, it is horrific.
Brilliant.
You know, you're paying 13, 14, 15, 16 resources for it. And you're thinking, well, actually, maybe I could have something with a little bit more armor and something that basically doesn't self-implode.
Yeah, and what you said there in terms of, you know, dealing 40 to the stockpile, that kind of brought up a question that I had kind of approached in one of the other episodes, but I'm curious about your perspectives on there of kind of the targets, you know, choosing your targets and kind of when, what the decision-making structure is between attacking the stockpile versus attacking, you know, command or mech. For kind of when to prioritize one or the other. Because I think, you know, one of the cool things about Battletech is just that you can attack pretty much anything that's on the table. What are you guys' perspectives on that and that decision-making?
A lot depends on the board control and board presence. because you do not want to, in the Battletech universe, it's like chess. You do not want to leave yourself open for an attack or leave your own command cards that may be valuable or your under construction card that's valuable open for an attack. So leaving patrol units out is sometimes a good option. Setting blocking mechs or guarding mechs is a good option. But a lot of it depends on board presence and who has a more aggressive mech base. Because if all of your mechs are slow, I'm going to have to be sending a lot more guarding mechs rather than patrolling mechs, because my opponent, who's playing a faster deck, has the ability to hunt down, while my slow mechs have the only ability, best chance I have is to go on joint missions so that if he puts somebody in front of him, that person, at least based on the numbers that I have, of course, you know, it's all about the information that's available to you. You don't know what missions your opponent might have. He has to block and somebody will be lost. And having units survive missions is one of the greatest tactical advantages in this game, which is why those 6 to 7 mission cards, depending on what kind of deck you're using, are so important, because you want to ensure that you get kills or you prevent kills. Because the math on that battle is so important.
Gotcha. And, you know, as the, when the mechs, like quick fact for kind of new players in there, you know, for mechs in the patrol, when you're attacking mechs, you know, let me rephrase that. So they can be involved in the battle, but do they tap to be involved in the battle?
Not if they're the target.
Okay. And then if there are other, let's say it's in the patrol region and they're along with other mechs in patrol region, there's mechs considered like in a group for guarding, you know, so if you have, let's say, 3 slow mechs out in your patrol region, one of them gets attacked, are they considered in a group where the other two can defend against moderate and fast mechs, or is it?
No, they are not. Kind of they off? Are not the target. They just get picked off, which is why mech speed is definitely a cost that you want to think about when you're building your deck.
Gotcha. Excellent. Well, maybe we can, let's start diving in and to Mark and kind of your spreadsheet. And so we want to go through alphabetical. So let's dive in alphabetical. You know, what's the first on the list of cards we want to focus on?
Oh, the first one I picked out was aerospace fighter mission. I started with commands and I picked it out for utility more than anything else. Mm-hmm. The original cost was 6 and 5 politics, which with Commander's Edition actually came down to 4 and 5 politics. And basically the card allows you to deal 5 damage anywhere you want to practically any target, whether it's a stockpile, whether it's a command card, whether it's a mech that's hurting. And from that point of view, it's actually quite good and quite flexible. It's one of those cards that can get rid of something like Black Market Connections, for example, or you can just use for raw damage if you draw it. I definitely wouldn't recommend building a deck around it. Having said what I said earlier, go try it if you want. It's got a politics cost, so you know, you'll have to see what mechs and whatever else you can put in there. But it's definitely one of those sideboard cards that you can bring in. If the other guy, for example, is playing with a lot of vehicles, then you can deal 1 damage to each vehicle, you know, and roll the dice, see whether you're feeling lucky or whatever else. It could be that if you know, you might take 2 or 3 out of those 5, which is a free hit effectively. So you know, I quite like it. It's never going to be main deck for me, but it's one of those sideboard cards that's actually quite useful and worth considering.
Now with that, you kind of touched on that idea of that where Commander's Edition really kind of revised and edited a lot of cards, like Aerospace Fighter Mission. I'll try to put together a list of all those cards and those changes and kind of drop it in the description for anyone listening to kind of get a little bit of errata so that they know.
I'm sure there's a list available.
Yeah, we'll find it so that people can see. But any kind of top cards that you can think of that were revised in Commander's Edition that we can kind of just highlight and go through real quick that people should at least be aware of.
That's another show.
Yeah. Is it that long?
And it's also a show dealing with the lore master, because there were decks designed specifically about revised cards not replacing their counterparts in the previous set. So you're looking at, for example, the Owens. Mm-hmm. You can build the Evil Owens deck with 24 Owens units, which are fast mechs that have C3 that can do amazing jobs with hunt downs. They've got jump, at least the Rise version, and you can do amazing jobs with hunting resources or hunting units in groups. And the lore masters had issue with the ability to put the revised units in the same deck as the previous units. They were supposed to replace them.
Gotcha. And just for the listeners that aren't familiar with lore masters, give it just quick, you know, what is that? What are you guys talking about when you're talking about lore masters?
In many of the games that have unfortunately gone by the wayside, the community was sad and wanted to continue support for Battletech. The Yahoos group elected lore masters, were folks who were familiar with the game, had some insight into the game. Some of them even had direct or secondhand information and contact with some of the inner circle of the ruling committees for DCI Battletech. And they were able to give insight onto how the game should be played or for the benefit of the community. So it's kind of like a community council for the game. And it was elected by the community, and we had terms of office that were for a period of time, some that lasted longer than others, Mark. We had a really good time just supporting the community with feedback on rules, questions, and those kind of things.
Gotcha.
Back in the 2000s. For Aerospace Fighter Mission, Mark, your ranking was a 7 out of 10, as in, this is above average. You could put it in a sideboard. I would put it as a 3 because I hate playing politics in my decks that are competitive. And paying 11 with politics is just insane. I mean, I recognize you could scrap for a think tank and those kind of things, but I just think it's so overcosted, and having to include politics or lose a war funds to politics rather than a logistics for restock, I would put it down closer to a 2 or a 3 for Aerospace Fighter Mission.
Yeah, and politics seems to be a weird choice lore-wise to kind of pair with that. It seems like maybe you can throw logistics to make a little bit more sense, but...
Oh, I would agree. I would agree. Yeah. But, I mean, there's a lot of politics on whether or not the aerospace wing gets off the ground, so
fair.
They do what they need to.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's go to the next card. All right, next card up is Arms Reduction.
Yeah, interesting little card. Basically, you pay 3 resources to try and hose your opponent. If they're not playing politics, then you're paying a lot for your politics, like Gustav likes to. And basically, it means that they can only pay or use 2 resources. Maybe that's the case for heavy industry, I'm not sure, to build something next turn. They can, if they pay 5+3 politics, remove that. But, you know, that's quite a big buyout. So you used to get a load of early decks with little Koshis and Dashes or 2-cost Innosphere mechs with no buyouts or just something similar like assembly buyouts and hope that the other guy didn't play politics and drop this on the table and really stifle them while you can throw out your weenie short early costs and swamp them basically. It's not seen so much these days, but if we're looking at this particular set, then I think it's one of those cards that's worth having a look at. You know, 6 of these in a deck with a load of Koshis. Maybe if you look at some of the later expansions with the 1-cost elementals, then you can have quite an effective deck that will stop the other guy getting much on the table and you can deal some serious damage.
Yeah, it looks like it has that that politics buyout, Gustav, that you were talking about there.
Yeah. Mark, what was your rating for Arms Reduction?
Oh, I gave it about a 5 because I thought it was quite useful at the start. These days, not played so much, so it's playable.
Absolutely. I think Arms Reduction is one of the hidden gems for someone who really enjoys a free deployment mechanic. I'm thinking Hussar. I'm thinking Flea. That's another mech that people should probably not play in their decks. But when you can pay 0... And get a free deploy and have a body on the board. And also when you're thinking about Arms Reduction, the cost of mercenary units, the payment cost for mercenary units does not count against Arms Reduction. That's only construction counters that you're limited to two per turn. So if you can get Hasty Alliance, get some mercenary units down, even buy a mercenary unit, like a one cost Grey Death Legion, you can get under arms reduction and still have some significant damage and threats on the board with the Inner Sphere. Mark was talking about the Koshis and the Elementals. You're probably thinking Clan, but the Inner Sphere with arms reduction really has some amazing combos with the free deploy Hussar, the Flea, the Hollander in later sets, all of those, plus maybe VTOL and Sandhurst Royal Military Academy. I'm giving arms reduction a 7 for constructed play.
Got it. And then the next one that that's come up, Era 4 is the next card, and that's actually come up in other conversations. So there's got to be some validity to this one kind of going forward. But Mark, let's take us through.
I like this one. This I think this is underrated by a lot of people. It's a low cost 1+1L1M, which if you're not playing either of those, isn't the end of the world. Single buyout. And basically, you tap it to deal one structure damage to something. One site. Okay, it's one site, not one mech. But that site can also be the stockpile. So if you're a little short or you've got nothing to aim it at, ping a card here and there and just keep the pressure on. The real advantage of this is what it can kill with that one structure damage. Normally, one of the tournament big cards is Black Market Connections, which allows you to recycle the cards you've scrapped or had scrapped back into your hand, and someone that can keep a Black Market Connections on the table for two or three turns to get those cards that they want in order to win the game, it's very, very powerful. If you can't attack it, whether there's a stalemate or equal mechs, or you know you're going to get blocked, or it's just going to end up in a big clash of metal and you've got nothing to get through, you don't need a mission card. You can just put this down, tap it, and deal with Black Market. Or some other uniques like Melissa Steiner Davian. Again, very powerful, very flexible, and I think very underrated by a number of people.
What's your rating, Mark?
I gave it an 8.
I agree. This is one of the staple cards in nearly every sideboard that I have. For competitive play, the Era 4 battery, for what it does and what it's capable of doing, I think it's a must include. I would give it up to a 9. Not in main deck, but definitely in sideboard. If you're playing against a lot of uniques or a deck that has two or three Black Market Connections, being able to remove those uniques and remove the ability for your opponent to search their graveyard for whatever card they need in a circumstance is huge. I'm a huge fan of Era 4.
I think I'm a fan of possibly, if you've got the space, one in the main deck.
Oh, wow.
All right, next card up. This is a big one. Bearer McKenzie Hammer.
McMallet, as we call them over here.
This one wasn't early. Is this card working the way we think for me and my girlfriend when we were playing? Probably because the first time I ever put this on a board and used it, I kept it going 6 rolls in a row before we were like, this isn't fun anymore. I think we need we're either not understanding this or something. But it just turned out, I was in the 1%, of die rolls for doing it. But
Travis, it's interesting that you said that. We just got Lackey running. I had Michael install Lackey for me and explain it to me. And we played one of Mark's pre-constructed decks. He has a bunch of decks that have been loaded up to Lackey. Mm-hmm. And one of the decks is a deck that includes this particular card, the Steiner Inner Sphere deck. Michael was playing the Wolf deck and he had a significant board presence. Mm-hmm. I eventually got out a Gunslinger and put the Bearer on it. And my Gunslinger was able to survive the initial attack and untap for enough turns, rolling 6s, if you would believe, one after another on Lackey. And he eventually just conceded. His stockpile could not handle that onslaught of the McMallet.
Hammered him.
It's definitely the Clint Eastwood Dirty Harry card for me.
Yeah.
It's do I feel lucky today, punk? It's a 50-50 chance whether you untap or not. It was kind of abused with inside job, which basically allows you to have a free hit on the particular target. And the ruling at the championship where that happened basically said that the inside job carried over, so the bearer would untap and get a free hit on the stockpile and untap and get another free hit on the stockpile, whereas the actual card itself just untaps, which means you can get another blocker in. Wizards and DCI judges and rulings as it was. It then got errated in Commander's Edition, and it's now actually a little clearer. It's
clear in the sense that you can't do that.
Yes.
You can't.
Yes. That is not.
That's not okay. Well, not what good. You think it's that 50-50 fair play.
It's not. Hitting below the belt. Yes. Yeah. It's a bit cheesy as well. Yeah. Let's face it.
Yeah, you think that card would just be better if it was a 1 and 3 or something like that, or maybe maybe a cheaper card and it was 1 and 6. It just seems.
I think one of these is coming in the box, Travis. Just so you know, you're going to get another one.
Okay.
Well, it's a fun. A gunslinger, a pillager, a Cerebrus. You want to have a mech that can pose a significant threat, and anything that they throw in front of it is going to blow up. That's end game play with the bearer is bad news from your opponent.
Yeah, it's the Steiner affiliation. So the other one that comes out quite a lot is the Banshee that will overheat. I can't remember what the overheat is. I think it's 4+3 or something like that. So you can get a fair bit of use out of that as well, especially as it's got 3 armor. So most of the heat just dissipates. And that doesn't refresh for the next mission, which it untaps for, so you can just keep it up and keep going with it.
Yeah, and it seems at the very least they could have made this a unique card, but I mean, I see people have 4 or 5 of these in a deck. That seems kind of absurd if they're getting it out.
You're never going to run that many. You're never going to run 6 in the deck, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
No.
Rating 5, Mark?
Yeah, just going back to the unique comment, then you're probably looking at Morgan Kell as a replacement. Yeah. But another comment for that.
Well, yeah, maybe that if they're both unique, then Morgan Kell's a way to get 2 in your deck, instead of the 1. It's kind of a way to sneak in.
Maybe.
All right, rating.
5. It's got that cheesiness about it, and these days you don't see it so much.
I agree. A 5.
All right, next card, Bjorn Jorgensen.
Yeah, I must admit, I always look at this card and I see Bjorn's little ponytail at the back, and then I see the Ghost Bear logo, and it's looking like he's got some sort of punk style white stuff coming out the back of his head.
Kind of like the Indian feathers from the Native American. Yeah,
that kind of thing. Unique Ghost Bear. Mech piloted by Bjorn deals an additional 5 damage to any target other than a mech. Very, very popular in early Battletech, especially with Dasher Prime. Stick him on a Dasher Prime, straight to the stockpile. 3 off the Dasher, plus 5 off Bjorn, 8 damage on a 40 card damage total, then that's considerable. You can look at the other Dasher comments, especially the D, but he's quite powerful in that respect. I think the limit of the target, i.e. other than a mech, has probably pushed him out of a little use these days. But for 3+3 T in an AT Ghost Bear Dasher Dragonfly style deck, he rocked in that respect at that time.
What do you think, Ozlov?
Well, when you look at the snapshot in time when it was just limited, for what he did a great job. I think he's a 6 or a 7. Looking forward in time, 100% of the time, I'd rather have Aletha Kabrinsky in my deck. Now, if I was playing Ghost Bear, the Ghost Bear Dragonfly deck, I'd rather have Aletha rather than
Aletha Bjorn. Was a
my brother's
mercenaries card, right?
That's right. I think she also was replaced in Commander's Edition too, but yeah.
No, I like Bjorn. I was actually just thinking, it's like, if I had a son, that would be a name I'd consider. Of course, we've been watching Vikings, which, you know, is...
Bjorn does mean like, bear in right, Scandinavian,
that also
so...
That also made that. Me want to... Yeah, fair. All right. Rating. What we got?
6 for me.
5 for me.
5 for you.
Only because I gave him a bit for history.
Fair. All right, next card up. Candice Leo. Yeah. How do you guys pronounce Leo? Everybody, Lau. Mark, yeah. Where are you at?
Candies.
All right, let's talk about the card.
Yeah, she does look a bit frumpy, doesn't she? Candies. Yes. Strange affiliation, or rather, quite restrictive affiliation, being St. Ives only and unique. And you don't get that many St. Ives decks. However, with the advent of the Star League in Crusade, then all of the Inner Sphere cards in the same deck make her a particularly interesting choice. Her effect of stopping any subterfuge card is very powerful in that respect. And if your opponent is playing dirty tricks in any way, shape or form, then she's really useful. Easier to pull if you've got a card like Hasty Alliance, where you've got a unique on the table already. Pop down a Hasty Alliance, go and pick her up and put her into play, and hose that other guy's deck. Only works versus subterfuge, but from that point of view, very good. Definitely for me, a sideboard card. Not going to go in the main deck because I have no idea what my opponent's playing, but being able to pull her in could make the difference between winning and losing.
Good stuff.
Travis, so when I look at Candice Leo, I can't help but think about Michael Stackpole in the Warrior trilogy. She plays such a pivotal role. Her son is Kai, Champion of Solarius, who happens to be my favorite card in the game. Yeah. I have a St. Ives deck. She is not in the main board, just as Mark said. Very limited niche use. However, when she is good, she is fantastic. I would give her a 9 when she is good, and she's about a 1 when she's not. So this is why you would have her in your sideboard. With the Hasty Alliance and Star League combo, she's in that deck that I have. She foils the entire Dirty Tricks deck that Mark was talking about. If Leo is looking at Tormano Leo and her sister Romano Leo, Max Leo's Legacy, that entire deck where we bribe your pilots, then we blow them up with reactor breaches. We're doing the terrorism on your stockpile, all that. She shuts it down completely.
And the Steiner Misroute version.
Yeah, Steiner Misrouted Commands, all of those kind of things. She shuts those decks down completely. She's a 9 when she's on. She's a 2 when she's not. So sideboard only.
Got it. All right. Next one, Cotton Hanger.
Yeah. I felt I had to put this in for a little bit of nostalgia and also a little bit of appreciation and understanding of what the game was like at the start. There weren't many Inner Sphere fast mechs. You'd basically got the Mongoose that was anywhere near reasonable, and it was the only fast mech that was played, basically. So the Inner Sphere had to come up with a way of dealing with a lot of the early fast clan presence, Fenrises, Dragonflies, etc., etc. And this, although it's not a subterfuge card, it's a little sneaky. It's a single 2-cost 4T buyout card that allows you to attack any mech. So if the other guy's sporting fast mechs, deploy this, reveal it, and then send your chunky, reliable, plodding slow mechs against it, and do your worst. Kill it off. It was one of the few tactics that were open to the Inner Sphere, because the majority of their mechs were really, really slow in the early expansions. And there was a lot of fast clan stuff. It was superseded by a number of other cards, probably single combat being the main one that put an end to it. But it was useful. It was one of those things that clan players didn't expect, and gave you a fighting chance as an Inner Sphere player.
Right. And that is a theme that I found kind of playing, you know, mostly with access to these early cards is kind of that differential in speed between Inner Sphere and Clan. You know, were there other things that Inner Sphere players like try to use and strategies they used in before those later sets came in, other than Cotton Hanger to kind of really kind of defend against that overwhelming
speed? I think there's a mission card that I would use over this 100% of the time, and that's Lured Into the Bog.
Yeah, okay. Agreed.
Okay.
100% of the time I put a Lured Into the Bog if I was deck design over Cotton Hanger. But if we're in a draft format, I agree. This card has a high value if you're doing a limited or unlimited draft.
Got it. All right. So next card, Death Commander Sabotage.
Again, another great sideboard card for me. Probably not going to be main deck because you don't know what the other guy's playing. It's Lao only, one of their wonderful little subterfuge dirty tricks that Candy stops, but it's really, really flexible. Scrap the card once you've revealed it and scrap one card in play other than a mech. So that can be any command card, any unique, any enhancement, anything. So from that point of view, it's a good, flexible card. Not cheap. Politics buyout again. Gustav will be paying 11 for it, but when it's on song, it can really swing that game. Go and kill Kai with this or whatever you want. So
he's targeting your boy Gustav.
I understand. So when the Death Commandos went after Kai, they were not successful, just so everybody knows. If you're missing the background lore here. But I would not put this in a main board. I would rather have a bribe pilot. I would rather something that I know, because mechs win battles. Command cards don't necessarily win battles, but mechs definitely win battles. So bribe pilot into reactor breach is probably the way I would go. Sideboard, probably. I might even put it in a main board if I have a deck designed solely around getting free command cards that are subterfuge out with Max Leo's Legacy, with Termano Leo, with Romano Leo, if that's your core. But it's definitely a way to remove those pesky pilots. And early game, people who are playing with Solaris Context can have giant pilots on their deck. Turn two, Kai can be out there. So be ready. This could take it out.
Appreciate your comment about the bribe pilot. But what I would say is you can't bribe pilot if there's already a pilot there.
That's true. Yeah, you cannot bribe a piloted mech. So you need to kill the pilot first. Assassination costs less.
Not as flexible.
Now, I do want to bring up here, you know, in case people are kind of new and finding this early, this video before some of the others, is we keep talking about kind of the main board, sideboard. And so, you know, I'm going to put a link down in the description for people, an article written by Mark here, actually, you know, about effective sideboarding. But, you know, one, you just want to kind of quickly describe kind of what the sideboard is and kind of the theory behind it, so that, you know, as we keep kind of talking forward, people know what we're talking about when we talk between.
Like last time, that's an episode in itself.
I know, but let's do a quick. You got 2 minutes. Two minute
right,
review.
What is a sideboard? If you're playing in a ranking tournament, you nominate 8 cards as sideboard, 60 cards in your deck. After the first game of your match, which is 3 games in an hour and 10 minutes, you are allowed to swap the same an equal amount of cards from your main deck to your sideboard and swap in cards from your sideboard to your main deck. So it's a one-for-one swap. You can tweak your deck, basically. What makes a good sideboard? Well, you need to know your deck, where it's strong, where it's weak. And you also need to have an idea about what you're going to come up against or what you're likely to be facing. Some cards are a little more flexible. Aerospace Fighter Mission, Death Commando Strike, because they can cover a wide range of scenarios. Generally, they're a little more expensive because you're playing for the flexibility. Some other cards, very often terrains, for example, you'll just bring them in and use them in order to stifle or nullify your opponent's deck.
Got it. All right. I agree.
You want to be ready for what you're going to see in the tournament, whatever your local meta is. And the sideboard allows you to adjust your deck to have a better matchup against different metas. If you're afraid of the super fast clan units, throw in two or three more Rocky Gorges and two falsified maps. If you look at some of the Worlds decks, like we did before, that have that, obviously the fear was there would be a lot of fast clan mechs. And the ability to have a Gorge in play, play a maps, have another Gorge deal 4 damage to all attacking mechs is huge when you're dealing with the fast units that will blow up. Looking at you, Dasher Prime. Looking at you, Elemental Point.
Yeah, but what we need to appreciate here is that Gorge is strong against Dashers, great. But it's also strong against a lot of free deploy. It's also very strong against a lot of vehicle-based decks because you're making them roll that dice every time they take damage. So you're looking at a terrain that is useful in a variety of situations. You only have 8 cards in that deck in that sideboard to customize your deck. So flexibility and utility is probably the key there.
Gotcha. And those vehicles, just a quick review, because the vehicles also have kind of armor structure, but in addition to the armor structure, they're rolling that 4 or 5, right? Every time they take damage, you roll a 4 or 5.
Five and six scraps. And unfortunately, the DCI rule is that it scraps not on structure damage, but on any damage assigned. Not damage actually received, but damage assigned. So it doesn't matter. You look at like the Ontos, you paid all that for the Ontos 6 and it's got 3 armor. Just one ping off an aerospace fighter mission can scrap that Ontos if it rolls a 5 or 6.
Gotcha. Interesting. And that wasn't the original rule, right? What was the original rule? Was it that same thing, but just a 6?
1 in 6.
Yeah.
Yep.
And when Arsenal came out, there was no limit on the number of vehicles in your deck either.
Gotcha. So
Bulldog Swarm.
Yeah. Yeah. People just played vehicle, and you didn't see a mech for dust. It always seems strange to me that they set the limit as 10, given that Battletech is a multiple of 6 game. 60 cards in your deck, 6 limit on each card. I never knew why they settled on 10 and not 12. I don't think that 12 would have broken vehicle decks. I don't think there would have been any all-powerful vehicle decks with just 12 of them in. But they settled on 10 for some bizarre reason. And I recall that they actually polled a lot of the players with an online survey, and the only option there was 10 vehicles in a deck, not 12. It just doesn't quite feel right. It just seems wrong. It's like someone got the numbers right.
Yeah. All right. So that's our quick vehicle digression. Next one is a banned card, but let's talk about it anyway. It's effective groundwork.
Again, it's the first. It's the first.
You can't get better than that.
Yeah.
Double everything.
Well, it's a 10 on the rating. That's why it's banned.
Yeah. Groundwork. And note here that it says double damage dealt to the site this turn. Now this card reworded reissued as a mission card, which is called Unopposed. And basically you double your base damage for that attack.
And Unopposed was in what set?
Sorry?
Unopposed was in what set?
Was it Mech Warrior or was it Mercenaries?
I think it was Mech Warrior. Or maybe... Maybe it was Mercenaries. I'll pull it up.
It was a set beginning with M, and we'll leave it there.
All right. But Effective Groundwork is banned. Don't play with it unless maybe you're in draft or something like that.
Well, you know.
Casual it's Mercenaries play. And Commander's Edition, Mark.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Okay. Casual
Common
play.
Card.
There's no rules on casual play. Okay. DCI or tournament-based, don't go there.
All right, next one is another banned card, Elite Mech Warrior.
Yes, again, you have to understand the meta. Lots of fast decks. Why was this card banned? Well, arguably two reasons why this was banned. One is the +1 attack, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But the other one is that you can only be blocked, or a mech piloted by this Elite Mech Warrior can only be blocked by not just a guarding mech, but a fast guarding mech. And as we've said with the Inner Sphere, there were hardly any fast mechs of note, let alone one that's worthy of putting in a deck, Mongoose being the obvious one. So dealing with this was particularly hard. This is why...
I would say impossible.
Yeah, this is why Caught in the Hangar was used. This is why Lord in the Bog was there as well. Innosphere players had to come up with a counter to this, or a way of dealing with this, because a lot of clan players were playing Dasher or Dasher D, Elite Mech Warrior, and an additional card booster, damage from missions.
Ferrofibrous armor.
Ferrofibrous armor, basically because of the Dasher D overheat. And additionally, and what a lot of people forget, card draw with ferrofibrous armor. Because you get free deploy, you get to reduce the damage, and you get a card draw. So it replaces itself in your hand. Drop that on a Dasher and pull out a mission, Super Nav, for example, you're going to take some pain.
And you don't even have to have a mission. In the early sets, that three-card combo was the magic number 7. And Mark wrote an article on that it's worth linking, Travis, about the magic number 7. But you put a leak marker on a Dasher D with ferrofibrous armor, that's the number 7.
I've got Dasher D in the mechs, and we're only on commands at the moment, so we can deal with that. But from that point of view, the broken element was being able to block it. When Wizards released the DCI rules a few months, I think it was about January, February time, and then Worlds was May, June, I believe, something like that. They put the rules out, and everyone was thinking, oh, yes, great. I'll play my Dasher deck at Worlds and whatever else. And then I think it was about a month, maybe 6-8 weeks beforehand, the banned list came out with effective Groundworks and Elite Mech Warrior and Dasher D. And then all of those clan players that were very much based on those cards, the Elite Mech Warrior and the Dasher D, had to rejig all of their decks. And there wasn't a substitute. The only thing that was anywhere near worth considering was a Dasher B. Everyone had still got Dasher Prime in there. So there was a lot of churn deck-wise before that first Worlds because of the banned list.
Gotcha. All right, hopping in next one. Elemental, Ivantha.
Yeah, I quite like this. Ivantha comes down as a command. It's unique. It's Clan Wolf. Tap, gain an initiative, choose a mech. Mech gets +1 attack. So for a 0 +2 T, you're getting quite a nice little initiative and mission boost. It's a command card, which means you can attack it. And it's got that one structure, which means Arrow 4 is going to kill it. But for what you're getting, it's a nice little boost. If you've got three damage mechs and you're going to go for a resource, tap it and then hit the magic 7, it's not bad. And not bad at all. It's definitely playable from that point of view. And arguably, if you're going to do it, it's probably going to be in the main deck. With subsequent expansions, probably one of the cards that got put to the side in order for others to replace it. But considerable.
Yeah. What do you think, Gustav?
For a snapshot, it's a good card if you're looking at just the unlimited, limited, or even Counter-Strike. You're never going to play it now.
Got it. All right, rating in the meta of limited Counter-Strike,
I gave it a 7. I think probably now if you looked at it, it would probably be 5 or 6-ish when compared to the others. Got but it. At the time, it was definitely playable.
Next card, Inside Job. We're gonna skip Heavy Industry because we already talked about how horrible that was.
It is horrible.
Oh, I don't get to have another rant.
Nope.
Inside Job. Part of the wonderful Bear of McKinsey Hammer combination. I actually gave this 2 ratings because it's not going to make any headway these days. But if you're in a draft situation, the ability to be able to deal damage to that stockpile is very good. One of the things that you look for when you draft cards is something to break the game. As in break a stalemate. What's going to allow me to deliver that final blow or get the upper hand? Because draft tends to order a stalemate in the middle. Cards like Heroic Sacrifice, for instance, you wouldn't put in a tournament deck. But if you're playing draft, you probably pick one of those and thinking, I can get that final blow in and win the day. An inside job is arguably one of those. It requires P. It's a zero cost free attack, effectively. A lot of new players pick it because of that. I'd say focus your deck. If you've got P in your deck, then great. If not, don't put it in. For me, it's a four these days. In draft, it's a seven, maybe even a little higher.
I think you can still make this card work. Mark said, the effective groundwork was reprinted as unopposed. You can reveal an inside job. You can play unopposed. You can do the base attack of, say, an eight off of a pillager, double that 16 damage. That's nearly half of what you need to win the game of the 40. It's worth the investment or scrapping the think tank for the politics. But you have to invest in a deck that wants to do that combo. So depending on how you build your deck in a constructed setting, I can see this still being a seven if that's your card pool.
So next one coming up is Gustav's favorite character, if not his current self. This earlier version.
That's right,
Kai Allard-Leo. I'll let you take this one at the start.
So Kai has so many great bonuses. The fact that gives you +3 initiative means that absent an opponent who has a bunch of jump units or also a competing pilot, you're likely to win if Kai's in the battle. And if you've played Battletech, information is ammunition. Mm-hmm. That's one of the quotes. The ability to know where your opponent is dealing damage is so crucial in order to ensure that you get kills and you prevent kills on your units. Kai makes that happen. +3 attack is fantastic. And remember, we get to prevent kills. He gets to prevent 2 damage to each mech in a group that includes a mech piloted by him. He is a great one to keep units alive. I don't think I would rate him as high as Mark does in limited, just because if we're dealing in the limited era, 5 is a lot to pay for a pilot. If we're dealing in the current meta, the ability to put him down on turn 2 onto a unit with Solaris contacts is fantastic. I would rank him a 9 or a 10. He is one of the mandatory inclusions in the big pilot deck, he's fantastic. I'd give him a 9 or a 10 in the current meta. I would rank him much lower if we were dealing just with limited, unlimited, probably a 5.
And that's due to the cost.
That's correct.
Yeah. Mark, anything to add?
Yeah. I think, as Gustav said, the prevent 2 damage to each is gold, real gold, because you know it, because you've got that +3 initiative. Unless you've got 4 dragonflies jumping in unison, which I'd love to see, by the way, preventing those 2 damage is absolutely golden on anything. The only way to really deal with it is to pile all your damage onto Kai's mech, and then he becomes a target in himself. I think the mission card bit at the end is an interesting thing to consider. It is an option. The card says you may reveal the top card of your stockpile. And if it's a mission card, you put it in your hand. If it's not a mission, you restock it. So that's quite a two-edged sword for me. I think if you're running a number of missions, you go for it. If you're running less than 5 or 6 missions, then you're not going to try and draw a card. But the bonus there is that you've got 3 initiative, which means you can play 2 cards, 2 mission cards, draw another one and play that as well. I put him as an 8. I think even at 5 cost, then in limited and Counter-Strike, which is what we're looking at for the first World Championship, I still think he's arguably playable at 5 cost. Yes, he's much better when you can throw him out on Solaris contracts, turn 2 and deal some decimation. But I think 5 cost is, at that time, still worthy.
All right, final rating?
I gave him an 8.
He's a 10.
He's a 10.
A 10 today.
10 today, maybe a 7 or 6, you know, in the limited era.
I 5 or 6 in the limited. I wouldn't pay 5. I wouldn't play Big Pilot in the limited era. I wouldn't.
Gotcha.
No, I wouldn't play Big Pilot. I might play Focused Pilot. 1 or 2 key cards. And at that point, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Miss Card, Manipulation Romano. This would be the aunt of Kyle or Leo. So,
yeah. The sister of Candace, just FYI.
Sister of Candace. The not slightly crazy, the totally crazy.
She is, yeah, she is nuts.
All right, take us through, Mark.
3 6p cost. So, 3 in itself is quite cheap. Scrap Manipulation of Romano when it's revealed. Tap all guarding mechs. So that's everything that's guarding. So that in itself can have quite a board effect. There were lots and lots of comments flying around when Crusade came out about people playing the Manipulation of Romano and Blitzkrieg combination. So Manipulation of Romano taps all the guarding mechs, and Blitzkrieg says that you can't be blocked by patrolling mechs. Basically, it gave you a free hit on the stockpile, yeah. And you literally just bundle everything up and send it across and deliver it. It's useful if that player is playing with guarding mechs. And again, I've given it 2 scores because of the potential for use in draft. You tend to get that slower game, that more cautious game in draft, and people will tend to guard a lot more. Additionally, as well, if you're playing early in a sphere, then because the mechs are slow, you tended to guard more. So from that point of view, tapping them all out means that you can get through and have a free hit on the stockpile, basically.
Gotcha. And it's saying tap all guarding mechs, so you know, that's including your own as well, I assume. But then with the guarding with the guarding mechanic, am I correct in reading that you can basically, you know, move a mech on and off to guard duty within a turn? There's no limit, kind of like to moving them around?
Within correct. Your turn.
Within your turn.
Got it. Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
So none of your mechs need to be tapped when this card is revealed.
Yes, correct.
Mark mentioned Blitzkrieg. Blitzkrieg is a Merrick unique mech. The only way you're going to get Blitzkrieg and Manipulation of Romano, which is a Lyo command card in play, is if you're playing the Star League, which means you're using Crusade. I don't think that combo is one to be concerned about. I think in the current meta, you're not going to have to worry about guarding mechs and controlling mechs all being tapped as something that's particularly overpowerful. I think there are many other ways to do a lot of damage in the current meta without having to have the Star League and these two cards play at the same time. I think for Limited, this is a huge value card. Limited is a slow slog. There's a lot of buildup, and the game is a lot of just board presence, and to be able to tap all the guarding mechs of your opponent is huge to push that last damage through in Constructed. Unless you are going down the road of, I want to play all my free subterfuge cards. I've talked about that deck a couple times on this podcast already. I don't think this is going to see play in Constructed. So I would put it much lower than a 6.
Well, going from that then to what is a card that's definitely stood the test of time in the game. So we got Melissa Steiner-Davian. No accolades for that horrible picture that they used on it, but the quality of the card is quite high. But Mark, why don't you take us through?
She really does look unwell, doesn't she?
She does, and yeah. She's supposed to be this truly stunning, gorgeous woman. But yes, some of the arts definitely fail, you know, in Battletech, and this is one of them, unfortunately. But, you know, unfortunately, it's for a really good card.
Yeah, I'm just thinking Buffy the Vampire Slayer wannabe. No, she doesn't look good at all.
Well, that looks like a vampire that Buffy will might be hunting.
Okay. I know Michael mentioned this in the first podcast, mm-hmm. or the second part of the first one. It is a power card, arguably, for me in the Steiner element of the Inner Sphere. For 2 and 2 politics, you know, you can pay the 2 politics buyout. Scrap a single card from your hand and return 1 from your scrap heap to your hand. Gold. Absolute gold in that respect. You get rid of some of those resources that you've put more in your deck for, so that you draw them early on. But once you've got to that critical mass, you don't know what to do with them. Feed them to Melissa and pull out the Kai that got scrapped the turn before or whatever else it is. Politics, again, okay. Buyout is payable. she could be a game breaker on that, with you being able to recycle the cards that you need in order to make that win. Again, one structure, arrow four bait is the only downside for that for me.
She's a 10 in my book. I wouldn't play Steiner and not play her. If you don't have her in your deck in a Steiner deck, you're doing something wrong.
You don't own her.
Own her. Print a proxy and play with her. She's fantastic. The 1-for-1 trade-off, just consider having information and having the right card at the right time in any card game is 100% the best thing that you can be in a situation to be able to look through your entire scrap heap and find the card that you need that turn is huge. One structure, arrow four bait 100% of the time, she's going to be a target, she's going to be attacked. But if you get one or two opportunities to use her in a game, the tide of war turns. You're not going to be able to get Kai back unless you're playing Crusade and the Alliance card. But will she be in that Alliance deck that allows you to use all Inner Sphere cards? Absolutely. 100% of the time.
Gotcha.
He's a 10 in my book.
Awesome. All right.
Should be a 10 if she had two structure.
is there a way to defend it against that? You know, if once coming out arrow is there a combination that lets her survive an arrow
yes.
on the other
there's
side?
Yes, there's a terrain card that allows you to prevent two damage.
Okay.
Hidden terrain? No. Hidden.
Isn't it like hills? Something hills?
No. There's a command card that hides it.
Oh, there's that too. Yeah, but isn't there a terrain card that prevents two damage?
No, Fog Shrouded. Oh, Rocky does two. Fog Shrouded prevents one and deals one less. Yes, I think there is a less two. But remember, with Arrow 4, it's structure damage.
Oh, that's right. It doesn't matter.
All right, next card. This one's frustrating to get played on you. Misrouted Command. Let's talk through it.
Yeah. Three cost, six politics. Scrap and tap a mech of the of your opponent, put three counters on it. Each turn, that opponent removes a counter and can't do anything with that mech until all the counters are gone. It's a funny one for me. It can be, if used in the right deck, it can be quite good. You're basically tying up your opponent's mech for three turns, which, depending on deck, can be really good. If they've spent a number of turns bringing out some big honking great gunslinger or whatever else, the most annoying thing you can do is misroute command it, and it's sat there for three more turns, having spent probably three or four building it. There's a nice, interesting little Liao deck with Arsenal cards that uses VTOLs and the wonderful suicide troops. And basically, it ties up the enemy by misrouting all of their mechs and allowing their VTOLs to hit the stockpile and drop suicide troops on them. And it can have the opponent in all sorts of spin and problems. You tend not to see it in tournaments. You tended not to see it early on. There were one or two decks that dealt with a lot of politics and tried to tie people up with Misroute Command and then Aerospace Fighter them. They tend to run out of steam after a while. It's useful, but probably not so much in today's meta, probably not played at all. But for its time in limited in Counter-Strike, possible.
I value this card up there as well. I think, Mark, you added it at a 7.
Mm-hmm.
I would put this at a 7 or an 8, even in today's standards, because if I'm playing Misrouted Commands and I'm playing Leo, the terrorism card, you put counters on a stockpile. I would be playing Underworld Connections as well. I can put counters on a stockpile and add to those counters, those suicide troop counters. I would also be adding to the Misrouted Command counters with Underworld Connections, and I would keep that mech tapped a lot more than those three turns. I think this is in the right deck, this is a powerhouse staple card. In a draft, again, when we're thinking the long slog, the ability to tap your opponent's Banshee and put it out of commission for the three turns is huge. in a stalemate situation, taking the biggest mech off the table. I'd rank it very highly in limited as well.
It's funny, the first time my girlfriend played this against me was on my Banshee. So there you go. She knew what she's doing. All right, final rating on that one?
I gave it a 7.
I'd give it an 8.
All right. So we got reoriented here with Gustav so that he doesn't look like kind of a skeleton in the dark.
Looking good.
Awesome. Next card, Morgan Kell, definitely the opposite of Melissa in terms of art. That is some awesome art, but also a pretty darn good card. But Morgan Kell, Mark, take us through.
Okay, Morgan Kell, unique mercenary in a sphere. Mercenary really didn't have any effect in the early expansions or the game itself. So from that point of view, he could go into any inner sphere deck, plus 2 initiative. Okay, so you get to play a mission card or a couple if you want. But his real strength is the fact that if he attacks alone, you can't block it. It's basically a free inside job. Okay, you've got to pay 4 each turn, but if there's that stalemate, delivering that damage to the stockpile can break that and force your opponent. And when that mission ends, he comes back to your hand. You can the guy knows you're going to pay 4 next turn and put him out again and do exactly the same. So it kind of pushes them into, if there's that stalemate, pushing them into doing something, possibly something rash, something you can exploit.
Gotcha. Gustav, thoughts there?
I think he's great. In the early game, he was an inside job. You can play an additional mission with him. Plus 2 initiative is also nice. I think he's a great card. I agree with Mark, a rating of 9 is appropriate.
Excellent. All right, next card, Natasha Kerensky. Quick gripe on this. Why Wolf? They were playing like in the early inner sphere, you know, should have been an inner sphere. Black Widow mercenary. That's what I think, but
If you're a Clan Wolf player and you see this card and then you go and look at Kai and you look at Morgan and you look at Victor and you look at Vlad, you think, what did Natasha do wrong to get that ability?
Yeah. I've never played her in a deck ever.
I think I've played her in 1 deck and that's about it. She's expensive for a pilot. Yes, okay, fine. +3/+3 puts her on track with Kai. Kai's abilities are good. Natasha's, yeah, they're kind of sucky, really.
Right.
If she's scrapped, roll a die. On 1-4, she ends up in the scrap heap. On a 5-6, you get her back again. That's a 1-in-3 chance. And then you consider what Kai gets of 2 damage progression and draw a mission card. Yeah. If I was a Clan player, I'd think, what did she do wrong? I'm aggrieved here that this card should be way better than that.
All right, so I'm trying to kind of make this little fan cards and new design cards. I want to bring in a graphic designer to kind of get up a new card design just for my own use, and maybe I can share with the community. And this is a target of a card that I want. So I'm gonna name Captain Natasha Kerensky, and it's gonna have the famous Black Widow picture of her from the original source book. And now, right now, we need to figure out what the cost and what the ability of this card needs to be to do justice to this character, you know, in the lore. All right. How do we modify this to make her as powerful as a Kai?
I think she should have the ability to headhunt.
Okay. So regardless of speed, she can go after a mech, is what you're saying?
No. On her damage. Give her a role just like a headhunter pilot.
Okay. Describe what a headhunter pilot is, just for people.
So a headhunter pilot has the ability on a die roll for every damage. You roll a 6, that mech is scrapped.
Okay. Oh, okay. Headhunt. Got it.
Yeah.
I'd go structure damage. Make sure it's structure damage on that. Any damage is going to be crazy. She'll spread it around.
Yeah, structure damage. That's fair. But if you give her that, she will be played because she has built-in 3 plus the damage off the unit. For every structure damage dealt, roll a die. On a 6, scrap that unit.
Okay. Awesome.
That fits the lore of Natasha.
And then also, like, just in terms of her survivability, you know, maybe switching that to make her more survivable. Because let's be honest, she survived a very long time.
She did. I think she should have a 50% of survival. What do you think, Mark? 50-50-50.
Every time I look at this card and I wonder if they worded it or numbered it the wrong way round.
And it should have been 66% survival.
I like that too.
Yeah. 1-4, she comes back. 5-6, she gets scrapped.
I agree with
there
that.
We go. That would be a playable. You make her a headhunter pilot and you give her survivability. You gave her +3 initiative and +3 attack. Natasha is going to see play.
Awesome.
When you're playing Crusade, you can get her into play for free with Solaris Contacts if you're using the Ark Royal Defense Quarter Alliance card. So absolutely, she'd be fantastic.
Awesome. All right. We got Captain Natasha Kerensky of the Black Widows. The card is in production. And what's it that the structure? You said every point for structure that she deals, she rolls a die?
Correct.
Okay.
Scrap awesome. On a six, yeah. You can all take right. the mechanic straight from the headhunter card.
Cool. Perfect. Next card, navigation computer.
Yep. Again, another one of those very popular was the wonderful evil Dasher decks that came around. Play navigation computer on a mech. That mech cannot be blocked by patrolling mechs that are the same speed. If you've got a fast mech and they're on a fast mech, you're through. And free deploy, nothing for cost, 3A. It was good at the time. Things have moved on from then. So, you know, if you look at the Evil Dasher deck, which we've got listed later, where Wizards of the Coast have got, they've got 6 ferrofibrous armor and 6 extra armor plating, then arguably you might have dropped a few of those and put a couple more navigation computers in on most decks of the theme. It was good when it was around, not so good these days.
Rating on that?
I scored it a 6 because when, as I said,
6 in the meta where it was created.
Yeah, 6 at the time. If it was today, it's not going to get a look in. It's probably a 4.
Yeah. It does not have a draw to replace. Like Ferrous Fibrous Armor has a draw to replace. When you play it and you get to draw a card, this doesn't give you an additional card back in your hand. I'd rank it a 1 or a 2. Okay. Back then it was great. A 1 or a 2 now for sure.
Ooh, that's mean.
I don't like it.
I don't like it either, but I'm, yeah, okay.
All right, next one up, Point Defense. Talk about art. I love this art on this one too. I think it's a home run there. But Point Defense.
Yes. Definitely one of the better pieces of art. For those of you that like art, definitely go to Crusade and go and look at anything that was done by Franz Vohinkel. And the cards do not do anything justice. So little pundit for you, a little tidbit for you there. 0 cost, 2A buyout and 2L buyout. This was used an awful lot at the start because everyone thought that missiles were great.
Yeah.
And realistically, when you do the maths, they're very unpredictable and very unreliable. But at the time, there was a fair few of those around. It was one of the few and only defenses against missile decks, and actually quite hard to remove because the owner of a point defense system chooses whether to scrap it for 4 damage or not. So they could quite happily leave it there throughout the entire game, should they wish. If they got one in the hand, scrap it for, say, 4 damage, put another one down the following turn. Peter Sunderholm had 2 in his sideboard of the First World Champions decks, by the way. So, useful.
Saying the owner of Point Defense system gets redirect? Yeah. My reading of that is that the attacking player gets to redirect.
Correct. You are correct. So
you lose attack power against the stockpile, but you can still scrap the Point Defense system.
That was a misread on my part. I was having a muse earlier today about keeping Point Defense systems on the stockpile, and if they couldn't scrap them or putting plenty of 6 of them down one after another to prevent damage. And probably comboing it with fog-shrouded moors and stuff. But you're correct there. My error.
No worries. So rating, maybe a rating in the original meta was quite high. You know, now not so much.
5 in the original meta, probably 3 because it's useful.
Okay.
It's not a 1 or a 2 because you might actually put it in a deck. It could be useful in draft.
I think it's a sideboard card. If you do see a missile deck, it really does help shut them down. But again, missiles are randomness, and I am all about deck consistencies. And at high-level tournament play, you'll see it's all about deck consistency, and missiles are not that.
And it seems like if you put this in sideboard, just putting 1 in might be just risky. You know, if you wanted this in a deck, wouldn't you want at least 2 of them?
Yeah, what you've got to remember in draft is that you have a whole load of cards and you build your deck. The remainder of your cards from the draft are your sideboard.
Right.
So you have a much, much bigger sideboard in draft. It's the other half of it. So it can quite happily sit in a draft sideboard without any problems.
Got it. All right, next card, Retrofitted Missile Rack.
Oh, the antithesis of the good old point defense system. Mm-hmm. If you like missiles, as I said, you like the unreliability of them. This is one of the ways of bumping up your missile damage or potential. There are one or two choice cards to put this on because you need to a mech with one base damage, which it then loses, but it gains two missiles, which if you roll good could be a six damage in total. The Ryokan D is probably the main target for this particular card. And arguably, when you look at the Commander's Edition pre-constructed decks, that's why Smoke Jag it wasn't banned, but a lot of players would not play it. They would remove that deck if they were playing a tournament with that, with the Commander's Edition boxes for that particular reason. It's way too focused. It's free deploy. Nice. Missiles, unreliable. If you like them, great. If you don't play with it.
Gotcha.
I'm with Mark. In addition to the Ryokan D, that Smoke Jaguar starter deck comes with a Puma C Adder, four cost Assembly Tactics buyout, has the two missiles and Narc. Having Narc built in, plus at least a base stack of one, this one has two, allows you to put a retrofitted missile rack on it. You could put two retrofitted missile racks on the Puma C, throw a targeting ace on there, and basically you're going to be able to do a massive amount, one hit wonder to the stockpile, because when that attacks, it will be blocked and be killed, but you can do a lot of damage directly to the stockpile with a missile boat. I like it in a missile deck. Again, I don't like missile decks, so I would give it about a four.
All right.
I went for five.
All right, next card, another one that survived the test of time. We've got Think Tank.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It costs you nothing. You can tap it for a resource. You can tap it for a resource and then scrap it, which is even better. And it gives you access to one of the assets for the rest of the game. What's more to like? I mean, my only criticism of this is that one structure and a position where you might be forced to using it because you need the resources. And it goes out on the table maybe a little earlier than you might want. And you don't have those cards that have that buyout cost yet. And it ends up getting arrow forward. That's my only criticism of it. It's a staple. It's arguably one of those cards that could go in any deck.
Good stuff.
I rank it a 10. It is the utility card that should be included in every competitive deck, simply because the ability for an opponent to lock you down with a Teddy Carito combo exists in constructed play currently with Hasty Alliance, and you can scrap this for the logistics if you need it. And even if they arrow for it, you can still scrap it in response and you still get the buyout of whatever you want. Early game, it can be a problem if you need that resource for your construction abilities, but this is the kind of card that you want to have in your deck. And before there was War Funds, it was the best, one of the best cards with regards to resource fixing.
I thought you could only scrap it on your turn.
I think there might have been a ruling on that.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was. That's the problem.
Got it. How many of these do you recommend?
Worth circling back around on, Mark.
Yeah, sure.
How many of these are you guys recommending put in the deck?
Two?
All right.
Two now.
And if they're, before War Funds, say you don't have War Funds, how many would you put? You put four? Still two.
It depends what kind of deck and the resource base you have. I mean, if you have an AT deck, I wouldn't put four in. Right. But if you have a three card, like an ATM deck, mm-hmm. Three would definitely be appropriate. If you have a four resource deck and you're playing politics, you might want to have four or five.
Okay. Awesome.
For me, you've got to look at your deck, how it's constructed and what it's designed to do. if you're playing a normal deck with or without Warfront. If you're playing with Warfronts, then arguably two is probably the choice. Probably 16 base resources, two BMC, two think tanks, and four Warfronts is where the standard resource distribution is for two asset decks.
Got it.
You've got to look at what you're playing, whether you go one, two, more, or none.
Got it. All right, next one, Cheptree.
Yeah, interesting card. Make the guy attack. Sometimes that's not quite what most people want, but actually, when you read the card, each mech your opponent controls must attack the stockpile. So you are forcing them. It's one of those game breaker cards. Great in draft where you've got that bottling up. Used in the 98 worlds to basically tap the other guy out. I.e., they've sent all their mechs to deal damage, and the opposing or your deck was running Santos Royal Military Academy, which means you could tap that, use that to boost a load of damage, untap it at the end of the mission and tap again. So it was a way of drawing your opponent out and leaving them exposed. Yeah, if you like for it, great. Politics again, though.
Yeah.
It needs a dedicated deck. I'm not paying $7 for this.
Right. With politics, your favorite resource. All right. All right, last one, last command in this one. We got Victor Steiner Davian.
Yeah.
The man that met the legend.
Yeah. You look at this card and then you look at Kai and you think, okay, Kai was 5-7T. Mm-hmm. This is 5-6T, so I've got one less buyout. Davian and Steiner again. Mech piloted by Victor cannot attack or block alone. That can be actually quite a hindrance.
Hmm.
If you've got three mechs and he's got three mechs and he sees that card, he's going to go across 1-1-1 and you're going to have to block with a pair or let them through, which you can use to your advantage if you're playing against Victor. The nice bonus of two extra attack is very good. I just think that pairing up and attacking and blocking alone is a bit too much of a restriction. Arguably, maybe he's better offensively than defensively.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, even my big pilot decks, I won't play him. I'll play the Prince.
Yeah, much better card. Version.
Yeah. And the Prince was in Mech Warrior, right? Prince.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so that was the last of our commands. Let's dive into some missions. All right, guys, so that was the end of our focus on the command cards from the Limited Unlimited. I hope you guys found that as helpful as I did as a relatively new player in hearing Mark and Gustav talk about each of those cards. Definitely, if you've been following me on the channel or on the Patreon or even on the Facebook group, you know I've been kind of playing around with a lot of custom cards. So it was really fun to kind of talk with these guys, kind of playing with one of the main cards that I'm looking forward to developing is that Captain Natasha Kerensky. And if you didn't notice, kind of I will be printing out some copies of the final version of that card and giving them to the Patreons that I have on Patreon that are supporting the channel as a little thank you, a little reward. So if you are finding this content valuable and you want to help support this channel and the creation of more content like it, go ahead over onto patreon.com and find us at RenegadeHBG and give a little bit to the channel. Just a couple bucks a month. It really goes a long way when everybody's kind of chipping into that pot. But with that, I will go ahead and sign off. Don't forget to kind of like, subscribe, and definitely comment down below if you got questions about the cards. I know Mark does a great job of kind of cruising those comments and giving some feedback whenever it comes in. So definitely do that. And if you haven't already, join the BattleTech CCG group on Facebook. That's a great community there. Great for answering questions. Great for getting cards for your collection. Great for learning more about how to play online, either through Lackey or Tabletop Simulator. But that's it. We'll catch you on the next episode where we focus on the mission cards from the Limited Unlimited set. And we'll catch you then. Bye.